I'm Paul Copan, and I'm the Pledger Family Chair of Philosophy and Ethics at Palm Beach Atlantic University and am part of the MA Philosophy of Religion program there.
Dr. Paul Copan, good to see you. Welcome, Paul. Thanks for being here at the Linear Theological Library.
Pleasure to be here. We're here once before, and we're glad to be back. It's really been a real pleasure.
Good. Well, what are your impressions of the place now that you've been here a couple of times?
Well, love the warm, open-heartedness that you all have to those who come through your gates, and the commitment to the life of the mind, to biblical scholarship. Love seeing this commitment to this such a wide range of scholarly interest, you know, ancient Near East, New Testament, archaeology, all sorts of things that are, of course, fascinating to me, having this sort of a background in biblical studies and so forth, but just loving this commitment to learning and to making an impact through learning upon the culture, upon the academy. And so the vision is very clear. It's very heartening. It's the sort of thing that we need to see more of in our day and age.
Good. Well, we're glad that you're here. Hope you come back. And you and Jackie had an opportunity to see our Oxford project up close and personal this past summer, I guess it was.
Yeah,
right?
Amazing. Wonderful to be in Yarnton, and love what you're doing there and carrying that work to England and in such a strategic spot. So
yeah.
That's really
all
tremendous.
The world comes to Oxford. I mean, in a way. I mean,
yeah.
You walk the streets, you hear dozens of languages being spoken, and see lots of different cultures there.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to make an impact. Let's start with who is Paul Copan?
Okay. Well, I'm happily married to my wife Jackie, and we have six children, three boys, three girls, and we've been
totally balanced.
Yeah,
totally,
there you go, like
really
the Brady
balanced.
Bunch.
Yeah,
we have loved doing road trips together. Travel is a big part of our family. We have been in Florida, South Florida. I've been at Palm Beach Atlantic University since 2004, and really have enjoyed that opportunity there as an endowed chair to travel. And now that the kids are out of the house, my wife Jackie gets to travel with me wherever I go, and
that's
just been a real treat. So I tell her that when I'm traveling, it's like color and flavor are restored to my travels. When I'm by myself, it's just kind of flat and not as enjoyable. So that's been wonderful, and I love birding, kind of like John Stott, as in England they say twitching there.
Twitching,
and,
okay.
But we love the outdoors, we love history, we love culture, we love going to museums. We, those are some things that we enjoy, and I, of course, do work in the area of biblical studies, especially in the Old Testament and ethical challenges related to the Old Testament, but do work in philosophy of religion and apologetics as well.
Well, you've written over 40 books now, and that's just
amazing. Or edited.
You're responsible for them one way or another.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work, and so you can't spend all your time twitching. If you got to spend a lot of time writing and editing and reading and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be talking specifically about your new book, I think 2022, Is God a Vindictive Bully? Reconciling Portrayals of God in the Old and New Testaments. Mm-hmm. So a lot of great endorsements here in the book as well. So let's start with the big question. I'm not going to ask you to say yes or no. Is God a vindictive bully? That would be too easy or maybe too hard. But what's the big idea? What are you trying to accomplish through and in this book?
Well, if I had to summarize what's going on in the book, as I'm tackling various ethical challenges like Elisha and the bears, or the firstborn of Egypt, the flood of Noah, the imprecatory Psalms, God's hardening Pharaoh's heart, and so forth. A key verse, I guess, would say is Romans 11:22, behold then the kindness and severity of God. And there are those, and I talk about critics from without, people like the new atheist Richard Dawkins and so forth, who emphasize the severity of God. Mm-hmm. And they diminish or ignore the kindness of God. Mm-hmm. And then there are the critics from within, people like Greg Boyd and others who reject portions of the Old Testament as being, you know, maybe harsh commands that are commanded by God, that God didn't say those things, that wasn't the actual God, that was the textual God. And so they're trying to emphasize the actual God being revealed on the cross and, you know, showing the kindness of God, but yet ignoring large swaths of divine severity, including Jesus' own severity. And so I'm trying to bring a balance to that and show how a lot of there's a lot of selective text reading that they do and ignore a lot of others. And I'm trying to bring a fuller picture of the text that ought to be included in conversation and in rounding out our understanding of who this God is, and that it includes severity and kindness, and that that there's a certain tension that is created. I'm not saying I've resolved it all, but I'm trying to keep things in that tension rather than going to some sort of a consistent extreme, but yet ignoring large swaths of biblical material.
Yeah, it's hard to ignore, you know, really when you're in the middle of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is, like you said, kindness, there is severity. I remember when we were writing our friend Randy Richards and Rodney Reeves, we were writing the book Rediscovering Jesus, mm-hmm. that when we get to the book of Revelation, we sort of kiddingly said to each other, well, this is a pretty scary Jesus,
yes.
You know, in a way, by the descriptions and everything in the account. So you get the impression, or people have the impression, that the God of the Old Testament has a particular demeanor and way of being, and the God of the New Testament is different. So the God of the Old Testament is severe, and he's judgmental, but the God of the New Testament is love and kindness and light and that kind of thing. So that's one of the early questions that you deal with in the book.
Right.
And how do you resolve that for yourself?
Well, a few things that are helpful to keep in mind, and you know, again, I do talk about Revelation in the book and how the severity is there, and a lot of the critics from within, as I call them, will say, well, that's just metaphorical, that's symbolic. Well, they don't show how that takes away the severity or the terror that is involved in the book of Revelation. They just say it's metaphorical. Yeah. They don't actually show how that makes things easier.
Now, for our listeners, when you say critics from within, who are you talking about?
People like Greg Boyd, a Christian theologian, Eric Seibert from Messiah College, is an Old Testament scholar, Peter Enns and others.
So these are Christians.
Yeah.
So they're within the academy, but they're also within the church as well.
Right, right. And I just see the kind of dichotomies that they're creating as creating a trajectory that leads away from the authority. You know, it undermines the authority of the Old Testament. It undermines how, even just as you look at Scripture, how the New Testament authorities, Jesus and the apostles, look at the Old Testament as authoritative, and they're not taking that kind of approach that these critics from within are. And so what I'm trying to do is show that when you look at the actual God and what they call the textual God, they, at point for point, they are identical. And that this kind of dichotomy that they're trying to create is actually a fallacious one. And so I'm trying to expose that sort of a thing. But as I look at the issue of the kindness and severity of God, some things that have been helpful for me have been, one, that that Jesus does reveal the full character of God, but it includes severity. So that's something like I mentioned Jude 5, where in our best manuscripts it says, Jesus, after he had delivered the Israelites from Egypt, destroyed those who did not believe. And so there's a Christological understanding as we read the Old Testament that we don't see it's just, you know, God the Father who's somehow pitted against the Son, and that was what he did back then, but Jesus is removed from it. No, it's the triune God actively involved in salvation history. So that's important to keep in mind. Secondly, that when God sends judgment, it is with reluctance, that God, for example, is grieved to send the flood, and that God sends the flood because human beings have already trashed the world that God has made and turned it violent, and God is simply finishing what human beings have begun. And so God is grieved in doing that, that God, as Lamentations 3 says, God does not afflict willingly. This is something that he is reluctant to do, and that's why he is patiently sending the prophets and renewing his covenant with Israel, because he wants to restore Israel. He wants to forgive. He doesn't desire the death of the wicked and so forth. So those are some themes that are important as we approach this, and that this isn't a God who delights in smiting, who delights in bringing judgment, who delights in being severe. This this. And I also, thirdly, emphasize how there is, of course, the justice of God and the holiness of God. But so often as we see the wrath of God expressed, it is because he hates violence against his image bearers, those who are being oppressed, those who are being tyrannized. And so it springs from a loving, passionate concern for his image bearers rather than being seen as some sort of capricious, arbitrary judgment that is being rendered.
Well, one of the things that you talk about in the book as well is the Mosaic Law.
Right.
And you spend a good bit of time discussing that over against the other laws that we might find and read about, laws maybe that come from Egypt or laws and come from Hammurabi, his code and such. What did you discover about the difference between the laws of Moses and the laws of these other civilizations at the same time?
Right. Yeah, and I'm raising this issue because some people are troubled that if the law of Moses does incorporate some other laws from around that time in the ancient Near East, of course, Moses was educated in all of the wisdom of the Egyptians, so he would have known all of these things. But some people would be troubled by, oh, look, this is kind of another source, and maybe the law of Moses is just a human invention rather than coming from heaven. And I think that as we look at the text more closely, we'll see, yes, there are some passages that are borrowed from Hammurabi or their similarities with the Hittite codes or something. But the key thing that I'm sort of like the Proverbs, there are some Egyptian parallels to our Proverbs that were gathered up and incorporated in the Scriptures. And of course, I'm emphasizing that all truth is God's truth, that God generally reveals himself. And as John Goldengay says, why reinvent the wheel? Why not include some of the things that were familiar to the people rather than coming up with something de novo or just out of, you know, out of the blue? And so what we see then is God, In this giving of the law, incorporating a lot of things that were familiar, including the familiarity of sacrifice and certain taboos and so forth, but working within the structures of the Israelites, but also noticing that as you look at the assumptions, at the worldview assumptions in Israel, as the law is being given, and the surrounding nations, you see massive worldview differences. You see how are foreigners treated in Israel compared to those outside nations? How are the poor treated in terms of, you know, it, within Israel and in contrast to the outside nations? What sorts of things are done regarding society? Who is more valuable than another person in some of these surrounding nations, as opposed to in Israel, where there is a more democratized understanding, not that hierarchy, and also corresponding punishments that match up with that hierarchy, so you have greater or lesser penalties depending upon where you sit in the hierarchy. Not so in Israel. And so what I try to do is highlight some of these worldview differences that are really remarkable and dramatic, that set the Israelite law, and also which includes its history, you know, Israel coming out of Egypt and therefore looking out for the stranger, the orphan, the widow, you know, the alien, you know, that because you too were once aliens in the land of Egypt. So there is that kind of a warm heartbeat that looks out for the marginalized, that looks out for the oppressed, and that doesn't, that there are legislation, there's legislation that forbids taking advantage of those who can easily be, you know, abused and marginalized. So those are some of the things that I bring out in the book, and I spend a couple of chapters on the book looking at those specifics. So even though there is material that is brought in from outside, just like Paul quotes from pagan philosophers and poets in Acts 17.
And agrees with them.
Yes, all truth is God's truth. Yes. Right, so in the same way, we can see that which is familiar to the Israelites, but from outside of Israel, can still be incorporated into their law without some sort of moral damage being done or a revelatory, divine revelation somehow being affected or denigrated.
Now, as a theologian, we could say that's part, I think you used the term earlier, of general revelation, something that God has generally revealed to humanity, or that might be just sort of intrinsic to what it means to be image bearers.
Right, exactly.
Back to what you said. We are talking to Dr. Paul Copan about his book, Is God a Vindictive Bully Reconciling Portrayals of God in the Old and New Testaments? Published by Baker Academic Press, yes. And it's 2022. Now, it's available at your friendly neighborhood theological library. And if it's not, then you need to tell them to get it. That's right. Some of the things we find in the Old Testament about penalties seem to be very strange to us, seem to be very, by modern standards, they seem to be harsh. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking specifically about the child that slaps his parent, you know, the death penalty is prescribed. The adulterer, death penalty is prescribed. How do you deal with those kinds of things? First of all, do you think those laws were ever carried out?
Right.
That's one question. Secondly, how do you deal with those kind of moving forward as we have adopted a different set of standards for sons and daughters that go away from their parents and dishonor their parents?
Mm-hmm. When we look at the law of Moses, we do see a couple of exemplary cases, kind of paradigm cases, where the death penalty is issued. One is for Sabbath breaking, the other for blaspheming the Lord. But generally speaking, in the ancient Near East, these harsh and severe penalties were seen as hyperbole or exaggeration. In fact, the book of Numbers tells us that the only crime, the only wrongdoing that could be must be capitally punished is murder. And there's a general understanding amongst Old Testament scholars that all other potentially capital offenses could be commuted to some kind of payment. And and so when you look at, say, how adultery is treated, even though it talks about stoning and so forth, that you'd sometimes see burning, these were to be, as John Golden Gay says, severe warnings. Don't go there. Don't try this. Mm-hmm. And so not as though people took this as a potential actual penalty. For example, even in the Code of Hammurabi, you have the case of a builder who, if he builds and his house and the building collapses, then that person's, you know, son could be put to death, or a surgeon who may blind someone or do damage to someone, that person's family could be put to death. Well, if you want to go into building, or you want to go into into the medical profession, you know, who's going to go into that because of these severe penalties if they're literally implemented? And that was the mindset in the ancient Near East. Although, again, you do have the potential death penalty, but typically it can be commuted. And we see that that's the case regarding adultery, both in the law of Moses and outside the law of Moses. That is, it's not the sort of thing that goes immediately to court. But basically, this is resolved between the injured and the injuring parties, that they are to resolve this on a more personal level. So I go and unpack that in the book and spend a few chapters on what's going on in the ancient Near East. I've tweaked a little bit from my Moral Monster book to this sort of a mutation, but I think that this makes a lot more sense and fits within the broader ethos of the ancient Near East, and we see it exemplified within Israel itself.
Yeah. I have described Jesus as a master of exaggeration at times. And I remember the passage where he says, if your right hand offends you, cut it off,
right.
Throw it away.
Yeah.
And he's certainly not advocating that we mutilate ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, in case we've done something like that.
Right.
So it's a serious thing. It just means that this is a very serious matter and needs to be taken and handled seriously, mm-hmm. and such.
Yeah.
Well, I have really enjoyed our conversation about your book, and we've been talking to Dr. Paul Copan about his book, Is God a Vindictive Bully? Reconciling Portrayals of God in the Old and New Testaments. And I think you think probably you can reconcile that.
Yes,
it's one God.
Yes, indeed. And there may be tensions, but I think to, like I said, to go to the extremes of the new atheists or the critics from within is to do an injustice to the portrayal of the God of the Scriptures and how Jesus indeed reveals that God.
Mm. It's important to read holistically, not just read atomistically. Here's the text I need to read. Here's one, here's another one. Mm-hmm. But reading the whole helps you sort some of these things out.
Indeed, indeed. Yep.
Dr. Paul Copan, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Great to be here.
One of the things I love about doing these podcasts is that inevitably I learned something, whether I wanted to or not. And today I did, and I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. For more info about our guest, check out our show notes. They're there for you. Subscribe to the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment. Rate us. You know the drill. We're on Apple and Google and Spotify and iHeartRadio and Stitcher and other places. I want to say thanks to those that make this podcast possible, for Kathy Capes,
Jocelyn Solis, Phil Kagi, and the Lanier Foundation. Let's give it up for them. Cue the applause track. Thanks for listening.
Hey, stand by for a nugget of wisdom from Dr. Paul Copan.
In the words of the singer Keith Green, keep doing your best and pray that it's blessed, and he'll take care of the rest.